And I'm close enough just in case I need to kick him underneath the table.
There you go.
Just a warning, and you probably already know this, but Kaz tends to dominate the conversation.
I've listened to every single podcast.
Oh my gosh, you are so brave.
I've heard everyone.
Good, well then you know just when to chime in.
Yes. I tease him about the, like when a joke bombs and there's like 3 seconds of silence.
Oh, I leave that in on purpose. I could edit that out, but I don't.
Well, I kind of like that part because that's, when I'm listening to it, that's usually when I'm yelling, Cash!
She's telling on you.
Yeah. That's okay. Okay.
Ready, spaghetti?
There is no I in denial.
There's the 3 seconds.
But there's water.
Yeah. And yes, that was the 3 seconds.
That's my new favorite. There's no I in denial.
Okay, ready?
Count it down. Ooh, that was loud. Count it down.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
This is Dawn. You're listening to Stamp Show Here Today.
It's time to send up. Welcome to Stamp Show Here Today, podcast number 32. I'm sitting here with Scott, Cash, Don, and Jeff, and I'm your host, Jessica. You can find us on Facebook at Stamp Show Here Today and on Twitter at Stamp Show HT. Tell your friends they can find us on iTunes, Podbay, and Stitcher. Let's talk about stamps. So this week we'll be talking about stamp news. The USPS raises the rates. Well, not really, but they change the look of the stamps. Hashtag stamp stories, hashtag the things stamp collectors say. And our expert topic of the week is grills.
And remember, stamp collecting happens when we dream together.
Why?
Stamp news. Well, the standard rate of mailing a regular 1 ounce letter will remain 49 cents for now. We are all going to have to relearn how we mail our letters and packages via the Brennan method.
Dun, dun, dun.
The Brennan method.
Yeah.
It's
the new
her
postmaster,
fault.
Miss Postmaster General. Gone are the days of slapping a stamp on a letter and knowing it gets to the right place. Now you have to make sure you use the following new stamps to pay the right rate. Here we go. The additional ounce stamp, valued at 22 cents. This stamp covers an additional ounce of letter rate. The first class postcard stamp, valued at 35 cents. This raises the rate to domestically mail a postcard. The 1 ounce non-machinable stamp, valued at 71 cents. If it can't be machined, as in you put a do not bend on the outside of the package, you are going to have to pay this rate. The 2 ounce rate stamp, sending a letter more than 1 ounce, that is now an option. Valued at 71 cents, rather than having to use a forever stamp and an additional ounce stamp, you can just use the one single stamp.
That is ridiculous.
Oh, it gets better. Oh. There's more.
Okay.
There's more. The 3 ounce rate. The same concept of the 2 ounce stamp, valued at 93 cents, but again, for 3 ounces instead.
So instead of using a forever stamp and 2 additional ounce stamps, you can now use one stamp.
Correct.
But realistically, people, not businesses, if you had a 3 ounce letter, they usually just slap 3 forever stamps on it.
Mm-hmm. You're paying too much at that point, though, aren't you?
Well, yes. Yeah, but who cares? 8 cents?
I think this is
Well, actually, you could slap 2 forever stamps on it, and you'd still be overpaying. Yeah.
You would. I think this is a cut at the fact that Americans can't add in their heads anymore.
Well, I'm a fan of Milton Friedman, but he came up with the idea of withdrawing taxes from people's paycheck.
Sure.
Because if you remove the tax from the paycheck instead of having person mail in their tax payment each quarter, they don't really look at it as paying taxes. They look at it as getting a rebate with whatever, you know, they get refunded.
Which is really a 0% interest rate loan from the government, right?
Yeah. To the government.
To the government, yeah. To the government. I take
that
back.
So if you don't have numbers on your postage stamps, you lose track of how much you're actually paying. And that could be what they're going for, because I can't see any other reason. I mean, I could see the forever stamp.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a bad idea in high inflation and a great idea in low inflation. But, you know, they're doing some weird stuff. The question is, the additional ounce stamp, will that be a forever additional ounce stamp?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
if they change the additional ounce from 20, well, it's 21 now. If they change it, and they're going to change it to 22, if they change it to 23 or 25, then yes, those will go right along with it as a forever.
And that was part of the point, too, is so that they can keep fluctuating them. And I think that's very astute. That makes sense that that's kind of taking away seeing at face value what you're spending for something. I feel how debit cards and credit cards work, too.
Well,
Thing is, I think they're trying to reduce when the rates change. A lot of times people say, well, the stamps in my drawer are no good, and they don't use them, and that's revenue that's – or money that has been paid to the Postal Service that could potentially be used at any time. And they want to kind of lock that in, then get people to keep using the stamps that they buy so that there's nothing left out there unused.
Except for stamp collectors.
Except for stamp collectors, right.
Well, now, do they use the same principle then? Jessica taught me this when she was in business school, that the main reason companies issue gift cards, for instance, is not to get people to shop at that location, but because they make sums of money off of the unclaimed gift card amounts.
Well, you know that I used to own a chain of day spas,
mm-hmm.
and we sold gift certificates. And our around Christmas time, our non-redemptions ranged right around 17%. So 17% of all gift certificates sold are never redeemed. I would bet that it's about the same with the credit cards mm-hmm. and things like that.
Well, you get a $50 gift card and you got $1.67 left on the balance.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You're never going to use it.
Exactly. Well, more than that, you have a gift card that is usable at Mervyn's. And it sits in your drawer because you don't go to Mervyn's. You go, next time I go to Mervyn's, and then 3 years later. I mean, that's why
Well, not only that, the next time you go to Mervyn's, you forget to take it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's they outlawed the they have an annual fee on these cards so mm-hmm. that they actually do not hang out there forever, which people thought it was for the credit card companies ripping people off. Mm-hmm. And it kind of is, but more important than that, it's so that the credit card companies don't have to carry these liabilities on their books literally forever. If you sell a $50 credit card, your company now has a $50 liability that will ride until some generally accepted accounting principle says, you know, you can write this off after a certain point. But
but it's still out there.
Yeah. In California, gift certificates never expire. We're one of the few states that have that. So if you bought a gift certificate for a Model T in 1915, it's still good. You can take it down to your Ford place, and of course, you know, it's probably $200, and they go, sure. You know, if you sneeze, we'll take $200 off the price, but.
No, I want my Model T.
Yeah, there you go.
And it better be brand new.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, they were smart enough to say the cash value, not the actual what you get. So if you buy a gift certificate that gives you a free lunch, it has to have a cash value to it.
So it kind of feels like they're trying to increase the rate on us that send simple flat packages or legal envelopes that we label "do not bend."
Cash.
Well, they've always done that.
Yeah, that's
now they've always done that, but a lot of people don't pay any attention to that, and they do slide through. They do get machined, even though it says "do not bend" on them. And really, I think most people are just trying to prevent severe bends and creases from being jammed in a post box or something like that. Rather than, you know, just the kind of light bending as it goes through the machinery.
Well, you know what's non-machinable is basically small boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Or a envelope that has a ballpoint pen in it. You know, that's really what you need to be non-machinable.
Mm-hmm.
You put a piece of – you put a cover between two pieces of cardboard. That's still machinable.
Yeah, yeah. they have a little slot. It's like a quarter of an inch. And if you go to the post office, you'll see the people take them out as an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. And it'll have the sizes. And then it'll have a little slit. And if you can drop the envelope through the slit, it's machinable.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. But it also has to be somewhat bendable because, I mean, they don't go around right corners or anything. But
they got to go through tracks and whatnot.
Yeah.
Well, my favorite non-machinable is something. I broke a drawer on my desk, and I asked my dad to send me, and I gave him the dimensions, and it needed a little slit in it, everything, a piece of wood that'll go on the back. And instead of putting it in an envelope or something, they wrote my name on it, stuck stamps on it, and put the piece of wood through the mail. And it was so cool that when I got it, I didn't use it.
I've seen a Facebook picture floating around of somebody who likes to prank his little brother by doing that same thing, but mailing him potatoes.
Yes. Oh, I saw that. I saw the picture of the potato. Yes, a potato is non-machinable.
So I was actually
it gums up the works.
Yeah. There you go. I was actually at the postal counter this last week, and there's a little sign on the postal workers, the side panel of their station, and it read, "Attention customers, all stamps are now, quote, forever."
Oh, goody. That means my 3-cent commemoratives are now forever stamps.
That's how I would interpret that. I got a stack of 1-centers that I need to use.
Well, realistically, your 3-centers are still worth 3 cents.
No, but according to this that note, they're forever stamps.
I think they mean all the stamps they sell now are forever stamps. People are probably asking, can I get some 1 cent or 20 cents?
Well, that'll be interesting because, you know, you have like, you ask for $1 stamps. So is the dollar stamp, the dollar stamp can't be a, you know, 7-ounce forever stamp.
Yeah. That's it. That's actually a good point. Does that mean they're going to stop selling denominated stamps entirely? What about like the $19.95 stamps for Express and whatnot?
Exactly.
Well, what they may do is they may take the value off and call it an Express Mail Forever stamp or something like that.
Gotcha. Yeah. This could just be the beginning.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure it is.
Feels like it's all.
So besides the postcard rate change, have all of these rates always been in place?
The second and third ounce at 22 cents is gone up 1 penny.
Yeah.
Postcards gone up a penny. The non-machinable went up a penny.
Yeah, but it used to be 70 cents.
The first ounce is the only one that stayed the same.
My butterfly stamps are 70 cents. So, yeah, they're up.
Yeah, they try, when they get postal rate increases, they try to keep the rate that you see constant.
Mm-hmm.
And they raise all the other rates that you don't see.
Oh, signature confirmation, all that kind of
junk. Yeah, all that stuff. Priority goes up. Express mail goes up.
Yeah, I swear at one point you're able to do the smallest flat rate priority box for $5, and I think it's up to almost $6.
Yeah, $5.75.
And what did we say? It must have been about 10 podcasts ago that the 49 cent rate was a temporary rate.
Yeah,
that's right.
That's going to be temporary, but it's going to be temporary too low, not temporary too high.
Yeah, it's temporarily at 49 cents until it goes to 50 or 52 or whatever the next one is. Hey, it goes to 52 then, or 55, then those extra ounce love stamps and things will all be good again.
Go buy all the 49 cent forever stamps you can.
Oh, yeah, because your 2% return on investment.
Hey, 3 cents, 3 cents on a 49 cent stamp, that's like a 6% return. That's better than some loans.
Yeah, except that right now you can buy postage. You can buy 10 cent and below postage for half face.
Jeez.
So if you want to use 5 10 cent stamps on an envelope, you can mail that envelope for 25 cents.
So I was unable to reach Stanley for comment, but I'm sure we'll be in contact with him soon to find out what his opinion is.
Hold on.
I have never known Stanley not to have an opinion.
Hold your ear to the window. I think I can hear him.
So our hashtag stamp stories, as things collectors say. I've been seeing on Reddit and YouTube and stuff like this, people posting things that WoW players say, things that Ingress players say. Well, now it's stamp collector's time.
Ooh.
So over the years, you tend to hear a lot of the same stories, euphemisms, sayings, antidote, and jokes over and over and over again.
They're not antidotes. They're anecdotes.
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 Anecdotal is what you're thinking.
There you go.
They're antelopes.
There you go.
I like antelopes.
So here at Stamp Share Today is no exception to the rule, and we have our fair share of stories and sayings that get repeated or that stand out.
Yeah, here, thanks, Cash.
Here are a few of our favorites. So I came up with this list. It took a while, but here's a couple. Stamp collectors don't run from freaks. They collect them. What's the best you can do? You got to do better than that. You hear that a lot at stamp shows.
Yep.
Okay, here's a funny one. Oh, I think it's funny. I bought a package of perforated pita bread. I immediately dumped it out looking for the imperforities. So, in science, there is only physics. All the rest is stamp collecting, and that's from Lord Kelvin, the inventor of the Kelvin system. I'll let Jeff do this one. He found it.
How could you tell if a fax came from a blonde? It has a stamp on it.
You want to do your next one?
What did the envelope say to the stamp? Stick with me and we'll go places.
An old one.
Yep. Oldie but goodie.
Yeah.
Kat, can you read the Homer Simpson one?
Son, stamp collecting is like life. Son, stamp collecting is like life. It stopped being fun a long time ago. That's mean. That's hard.
Nope.
And who's that from?
It's Homer Simpson.
There we go. You got it taken from the who's saying it.
Mm.
Yeah.
So he says dumb things all the time. So this is just one of them.
Well, we have stamp collecting happens when we dream together.
Mm-hmm.
We have stamp collectors stick together. Stamp collecting for lovers of ice cream.
What?
I guess because you lick stamps, you like ice cream. Although I haven't. I eat mine with a spoon.
Same here.
Stamp collectors where the goal is to get unhinged.
Ooh, I like that one.
And Foxy doesn't turn stamp collectors on. If Foxy, you know, like the paper gets foxed.
Tone spots.
Tones.
Wow, those are all really good.
Yeah.
Okay. I like the unhinged one.
I know. So, again, on Facebook, Twitter, whatever, and hit us up and tell us your own things that stamp collectors say. Hashtag stamp stories, hashtag things that stamp collectors say.
Yep, everything that all us Homo sapiens say and... hetero sapiens also.
You can edit that one.
I might have to.
Okay, so updates. Kanaj, what corrections and stories it looks like that you have for us today?
No corrections, but I want to compliment the ASDA magazine because they have a person named Richard Lehman, which we have quoted prior. He is a writer for several...
Forbes.
Forbes is where we saw his, but he's written for other places on the market, the investment, the markets of postage stamps and, you know, putting them in your 401k and things
that. What is it that you say? We don't advocate using stamps. What is it?
We do not advocate investing in, we do not discuss investing in stamps. However, given that. Let's talk about investing in stamps.
There we go.
And the latest one, which I thought was really great, he was talking about the changes in currency over the past 6 months to a year and how right now the drop in the euro and things like that, if you're paying with U.S. dollars, it really behooves the U.S. people and the British people, because the pound hasn't been affected very much, to... go to places like Germany and Austria, where there's two major auction houses, and buy stuff there. Italy also. Any Euro country. But the I forget what the name of the auction company is. H.R. Harmer's
Christoph Gartner?
Yeah, the the holding
Cornfilia?
Company. Cornfilia. And so you can get discounts anywhere from 28% to 66%.
Depending
on what currency.
Oh, good
grief. And these auctions carry U.S. stamps. So if you are a U.S. collector and you can find a nice U.S. number one in a Eurozone's country, the chart here shows that you're going to be paying about 28% less than you would 2 years ago.
So basically it covers the tax and the tip.
Yes.
Still.
But still, 28% is...
And you get to repatriate some stamps.
Yeah.
Bring them home.
And they get to come home. So anyway, I want to congratulate ASDA. I want to give out a shout to Richard Lehman and check it out for yourself. See if there's anything overseas you like, because there is a good chance that you'll save some money.
So I'm trying to wrap my head around this. How does this work? Why is it when I go to sign up for there, why am I paying less by currency?
Because you are bidding in U.S. dollars because that's what you have in your pocket.
Okay.
They are selling in euros because that's what they want to get.
Okay.
If the price of a euro drops, which it has, it's dropped by 28.3%.
Okay.
If the price of the euro drops, that means that if they don't modify their pricing, which they will, they'll modify their pricing in the next catalogs and stuff that come up, their prices will increase because the value of the currency has dropped. But in the meantime, I mean, they only print the catalogs once a year.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, you have this dropping currency that you can play against.
Okay. So if you're doing it, you catch it when it's at a low, say a month before they come out with a new one.
Right. Well, if you're buying a stamp that the catalog says is worth 1,000 euros,
mm-hmm.
and you're bidding in U.S. dollars, and the euro has gone down against the U.S. dollar, that mm-hmm. means you're spending fewer dollars for that 1,000 euros than you would have been.
Okay.
Well, a 1,000 euro stamp 2 years ago would cost you $1,500.
Mm-hmm.
Today, it costs you $1,070. So you're saving $430 off that purchase.
But they're still using that same price.
Right.
Yes.
They're still getting the exact same number of euros for their stamp.
Because they're saying it's still
worth.
Okay.
But you're paying a different number of dollars.
I'm paying less for my euros.
Right. You're paying less for your euros.
Interesting.
And it applies to quite a few currencies. It's just that the euro took such a big hit. The Russian ruble took a massive hit. I mm-hmm. don't know of any stamp auctions in Russia. But if you could buy... the other bad thing about Russia is they are very sophisticated. So when their currency started going in the toilet, they started switching over to other currencies very quickly.
Mm.
So it's difficult to cash in on those. But the smaller auctions and the medium-sized auction houses... they may not get a lot of Americans bidding in them. You know, there's a lot. There's a good play to get there.
It also allows you to bid stronger against somebody who is over there in the Eurozone that is bidding in euros. You're bidding at an advantage because you have more buying power.
Hmm.
And like we always say with investing, invest. And like we always say with investing is like gambling. Never lose more than you can get back by selling a kidney.
Cash's kidneys are for sale on Craigslist.
Just look for the username Stamp and Stuff.
That's part of the stuff, by the way.
Second thing is the $2 circus sheet is going to be footnoted in Scott's. It's not going to have a major number listing.
Or a minor number either.
Yeah.
Yeah. When we had Chad Snee here, he had indicated that they were going to be listed. And I guess the Scott catalog has backed off from that. And it's now only going to be a footnote for the variety with die cuts that came in the yearbook.
Hmm.
The press sheet, which was issued in perforate, will be listed.
Right.
And this will be a footnote under that listing.
And I'm sure the footnote will eventually carry a price with it because that's generally what
it
they do.
It likely will, yes.
But so
it,
they'll put a price with a footnote?
Yeah, they do that several times.
Okay.
Yeah, if you
I can think of examples now.
If you want a deal, Mystic's actually selling theirs well below market. So
yeah, anybody, Mystic, their die cut was $45.
It was like $59 last time.
$59?
Yeah,
those are $75 to $100 sheets. So if Mystic is selling them for $59, they might have something going on. Which, by the way, I want to bring this up. The 1865 Civil War stamp.
Uh-oh. That's
the sheet.
Right.
What happened with that?
Don Bottomall?
Yeah, who knows?
You're talking about the Improv Press Sheet.
The Improv Press Sheet. It looks like they issued the same amount as everything else. I think somebody bought them up.
Somebody cornered the market on them.
And raised the price. Instead of getting $20 to $22 each, they're getting $250 each.
Well, he obviously buys a lot of new stamps when they come out if you start looking at his catalog.
I don't think he did it.
You don't think it was him this time?
No. It was somebody else cornering the market. It was somebody who went out there and said, hey, I'll...
They were sold out before the date of issue, just like the Circus Press sheets were. Mm-hmm. But for some reason... And they were issued in the same quantity as the other years were. But for some reason, they must have had a very, very large buyer of this one particular sheet, and they've cornered the market and driven the price up.
Driven the price up ten times.
Yeah.
Wow.
So everybody out there, let's boycott this guy because that's not kosher.
Wow.
It's not cool, man. Not cool.
No.
Well, like I know Mystic has the only variety of the Circus sheet, that gold omitted.
Yeah, but that's a fair find. This one is just they wrote a big check and bought the issue. And that's what goes on like in Grenada. You know, now you're dealing with the Grenada sort of market.
And that's the trouble with the Postal Service deciding to only issue low quantities of some of these things. Yeah, I understand that it's a higher price than their normal
issue. Put a maximum of five sheets on it or something.
Yeah, but sometimes dealers they'll just get a whole bunch of people to order them for them.
You need 200 people to order them.
Hey, that's not a big deal. Jessica and I saw that all the time in pins, honestly. I know it's a silly comparison, but their expensive high-end series that they did about 10 years ago, used to be able to buy them online, and they'd have 100 that they'd make of this one single run, and one person would go buy 80. Mm. So when they started putting a cap on it, they just started having their friends buy them for them.
Oh, that's when
that was the way around
it. Coming out, too. It encouraged counterfeiting.
It does. It does encourage counterfeiting.
Well, if the post office is listening, can you put a limit on the purchases at least, to try...
At least on the pre-orders.
On the pre-orders, try to control this. I mean, I understand, stuff selling out quickly, but it sells out quickly because, 500 collectors want to get it, not because one guy writes a really big check.
Yeah, one guy shouldn't be buying 500 or 1,000 of those press sheets.
Oh, I think that the issue was 2,500.
Yeah.
Wow.
How much for each of the sheets initially?
Each sheet
probably is around $60.
No, 40, 12.
Well, they're at face, basically, right?
$14, $7, no, $8 each.
No.
So you're talking about $20,000.
Yeah.
And you own the issue.
Yeah, and that's not right.
No.
Well, he's going to turn around and turn $20,000 into $100,000 at that point, isn't he?
Well.
If not worse.
Yeah.
Well, he's going to try.
Yeah.
He's going to try. I mean, right now he's getting $250 each. It doesn't take, very long to make your investment back.
No kidding.
Okay, so our listener question this week is from Charles. He says, I'm not sure if this is the correct form for a question. Maybe you can help me.
It's a correct form for any question you have, whether it's stamp collecting or not.
There we go. But maybe you can help point me in the correct direction. I have approximately 100 U.S. stamps on card from 1919 to 1923. Is there someone who can contact me or be able to see if I have anything that's worth anything, or if anyone's interested in acquiring these? Thanks in advance. So are stamps from 1919, 1923 worth anything?
Yes.
Well, yeah, it's...
They're worth at least face value.
Oh, they're generally worth more than face value from that era.
Well, I'm curious. It says 100 stamps on card.
Yeah, does that mean they're like
proofs
printed on the card, or are they?
If you have card proofs
affixed to a card, or what does that mean?
Yeah, if you have card proofs from 1919 to 1923, you won the lottery,
and you have 100 of them.
You didn't win the lottery, but you know, if they're printed directly on the card, then they, depending on what they are, they can be worth anywhere from $40 to a couple hundred dollars a piece. If they're just regular stamps and they're pasted on cards, that's completely different, and they're worth much, much less.
Or are they postcards?
Or are they postcards?
Or did they send a picture with it?
Nope.
Did they hold the picture?
So mistake number one.
Yes. Let's get to computer etiquette here. If you want to ask us a question about something,
and you want to know what it's worth or what it is, we have to be able to at least see a picture.
Yeah.
That would help. Absolutely.
So who should he contact to see if he wants to sell them? Who buys a lot of stamps?
I tell everybody to look for a local stamp show and actually take them over there and put them in front of them.
Yeah.
I mean, as a matter of fact, today at the stamp show, I saw a person I hadn't seen in a long time named Steve Jarvis. Shout out to Steve.
Another Steve.
Steve.
Oh, darn, I missed him.
Oh, yeah, he was around. And he had a great thing where a person would call up and he'd say, "Wonder if I was selling a car and it was a Rolls Royce, how much would you give me?" And he said, "Well, is it a Tonka Rolls Royce? Is it a Matchbox Rolls Royce? Or is it a real Rolls Royce? Is it a Rolls Royce that's been squashed into a cube at a metal recycling place?
Is it from 1923 or is it from 1993?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's very difficult when you have no information other than that there's 100 of them.
Oh, yes, 100.
Yes, that was very helpful.
So the answer is,
maybe
look on the internet, see if you can find a local dealer or a local stamp show, and contact them either through the internet or by phone.
No, I'm going to make Charles's day here. Charles, you have 100 very, very rare items, probably worth about $10,000 each. I would go out and buy yourself the largest yacht you can find because you are making bank here.
Or not.
And you can edit all of that out.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
Okay, so expert topic of the week is grills. So we've talked about the Benjamin Franklin Z-Grill 1-cent stamp of 1868 several times, and its changing of hands from one millionaire to the next. Just exactly what it is that makes that stamp so valuable brought up some questions. So now we're going to talk about the history and eventual phasing out of this stamp experiment. Yes, I combined two words.
Cute.
So just exactly what is a grill on
like
the stamp?
Like infotainment.
Exactly.
Well, I think the best way to put it is, you know that meat tenderizer that you have in the drawer in the kitchen? It's like they whacked the stamps with those things.
But that's smaller.
What it looks like. That's not how they did it, but that's what it looks like. It's got those little pyramid or diamond-shaped
whack marks
impressions on the paper of the stamp.
So about when were they used in the U.S.?
Civil War era.
Yeah. They were conceived of by a guy named Charles F. Steele, and he worked for the National Banknote Company, and this was...
Chuck Steele?
Yeah,
Chuck Steele.
And
I met him this afternoon.
And it was... The purpose of it was to break the fibers of the paper and allow the cancellation ink to be absorbed by the fibers of the paper so that stamps could not be reused by removing the cancels. And it was thought that if you break the paper fibers and let the ink sink in, it will be more difficult to remove the ink. Whereas if you just have a flat surface, you can kind of wash it off because the ink won't penetrate and soak in.
So was that something that they had seen come up as an actual problem, or was that just a fear that they had?
Well, there were
small problems, but
here's what the internet says.
They were more paranoid.
Yeah. Mm.
That's what I would have thought.
Here's what the internet says, and I have problems with this, so we can explore that. But the internet says people were hoarding coins. So to keep the economy moving, stamps were declared as currency. There was fear that people would wash out stamp cancels and reuse the stamps as money. So the grilling system was invented by Charles Steele. I have a couple problems with that on a lot of levels, like that stamps really were never exchanged for currency.
Wasn't that the point of those little, I can't remember the name, those little encased yeah. stamps?
But that was different. There was a coinage shortage. But that was for advertising purposes. So that's why those were circulating around. And for people in other countries, they would take a 3-cent stamp, encase it in a little brass holder, and then cover it with a piece of mica.
It was about the size of a coin, and one side would be covered with mica so you could see the stamp through it, and the other side would have an advertisement embossed onto just like you would on a coin, but it would be embossed into the casing.
So the advertiser would cover the cost of encasing the coin or the stamp. Then it would circulate as a 3-cent stamp.
And they're incredibly valuable.
As
a 3-cent coin. Supposedly, if you ever actually wanted to redeem it, you wouldn't redeem it. You just stick the stamp on an envelope and it would take off. So you get your 3 cents of value out.
Is that why there are a few of them around? People using them?
Well, coinage, I think that Scott was absolutely correct that it was more paranoia than any actual thing going on, because the stamps never really circulated that much as coins. There was a big problem in the 1850s with the price of copper, actually the 1840s. And then when the Civil War started, a lot of the silver started leaving, but the copper coinage stayed. So if you have half cent, which back then a half cent was about a quarter, and a 1 cent was like a 50-cent piece. So you were paying everything in halves or quarters and 50-cent pieces, and anything over that was hard to find. In addition to that, the silver coins were incredibly small. And so, you know, people had problems with it anyway, because you had a 3-cent silver piece that was, and a 5-cent, a half dime. They didn't actually call them a nickel, because they weren't, but they were half dimes and they were micro thin. They were very small. So you had people who kind of didn't want to use that coinage. But the fear, yeah, what can you say?
So how was the grill applied to the stamp? Were they whacking them with meat tenderizers
or
what?
Well, they don't really, there's no real record of how the grills were applied. It is thought that they went through a press similar to like a wringing machine that you would have for an old-time laundry where you would wring your clothes through it. Mm-hmm. It's thought that they had rollers on there and these grills were embossed onto the rollers. And maybe one might be rubber and one might be steel, or they both might be steel. But there's no patent information. There's no technical drawings on how these things were manufactured or how it was done. So we really don't know for sure how it was done. There's a bunch of theories, but they're different proponents of the different theories. But most there's a couple that are fairly plausible and well thought out.
That's incredible that nobody kept record of that. Was that part of maybe trying to keep it under their hats for secrecy and then just it died out and it never got preserved?
It's possible, but the grilling of the stamps was only for a very short period of time. It was only a few years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was decided that the cost was not sufficient. It didn't sufficiently outweigh the potential loss of revenue from reuse stamps, so they discontinued doing it. And
well, this is something that I brought up before. They had a 15-cent stamp that was black, 15-cent Lincoln stamp. If they really wanted to protect their revenue, you wouldn't have a black stamp getting a black cancel. No other country but the United States really had a high-value stamp that was black. As a matter of fact,
not high-value, but the Great Britain penny black.
Right, and they switched that one to red fairly quickly.
Fairly quickly, yeah.
For the same reason, right?
Part of it,
France,
yeah.
France had a black stamp that they switched out fairly quickly.
Well, France had postage due stamps that were black.
But who cares? You know, because a postage due stamp, you don't cancel it. You pay us the money. The only country that I can find that continued to use a black stamp was Austria. So it was us in Austria using a black stamp, and theirs was not a high value. So it sort of, you know, flies in the face of, yeah, we can do, you know, we're Americans, heck yeah.
But it wasn't just a 15-cent stamp that was grilled.
Yeah. No, I totally understand that. But the protection of revenue, if they wouldn't do the really easy stuff, why would they do the really difficult stuff? And I speak that grilling was more difficult than saying, hey, let's make this stamp a different color other than black.
Well, I can understand that it was a pain in the butt. But then again, from all the variations that we see in grills, from split grills and double grills and multiples where some stamps have grills and others don't, the end roller grills, and the different sizes of the grills as well, they were still in the process of trying to figure out what they were doing throughout that period anyway.
And the experiment worked so well that how many other countries did it other than us?
One.
And that was the powerhouse of
Peru.
but you know what issues that appears on? It appears on the CBEC issues that were printed by the banknote companies.
Right, yeah.
And why do you think they were grilled? Because they were done by the banknote companies at the same time.
Well, it could be also that they did it and they charged more for the processing.
Oh, I'm sure they did.
They said, hey, you know, we can get an extra 1/10 of a, you know,
we can get an extra penny per
sheet or something. Yeah, let's charge them for grilling. And Peru said, oh, yeah, let's grill them so that nobody can wash out the cancels.
So I know that older U.S. stamps tend to get pricey when they're mint. But if you want an example of a grilled stamp with full, never-hinged original gum, look at the issues of Peru that are grilled and find one of those, because those are fairly inexpensive. And you can get a grilled stamp, never hinged, for probably less than $10 or $15.
Oh, that's
easily.
Not bad.
Less than a dollar.
Well, you can get multiples, yeah.
And since the banknote company did it, it's going to be the same grills that appear on the U.S. stamps.
It'll likely be the F grill, yes.
So what tools do you need to figure out what grill you have or detect a grill?
Oh, here's a cool thing that I saw with how to identify grill stamps. Here's what you need. Stamp forceps. And I thought that was cool when I saw that. I go, stamp forceps. And they, you know, they just say tongs. You know, it's like pick up the stamp with tongs. It's like, well, doesn't everybody do that? So get your stamp forceps and...
You know the guy that wrote that had to have been a doctor then. Forceps.
Well, to tell the different types of grills apart, first of all, you need a description of the sizes, and you need to be able to measure them. Now, sometimes they're hard to see on used stamps because a lot of times the cancel will obscure them. So on used stamps, usually the best bet is to make sure you've soaked any gum and hinge remnants and everything else off of the back. And then once you have the back clean, you can take and usually you can see the grill from the back a little bit better than you can from the front. And you can also tell because some of these grills were impressed from the back and some of them were impressed from the front. And so you can tell that. And that's one determining factor. The size is another determining factor. And when you expertise grills, it isn't just the size and the direction that they were impressed. You also have, we also look at the spacing of the little indentations, and the horizontal and vertical spacings all have to be proper as well. And the number of rows and columns all have to be proper for that type of grill for it to be genuine. So they have been faked, but most of the fakes are not convincing if you know what you're looking at.
And another thing is the grill has to be on the correct stamp.
That's true.
We see a lot of banknotes that are grilled, and they use the wrong issue.
Yes.
Well, then, how does that cause problems when somebody shows up, like they're showing one of the rarest ones besides the famous Z grill, is a 30-cent I grill, of which there's one surviving copy. So
there's one documented surviving
copy. So then, let's say I'm digging through somebody's stamp album that hasn't been touched in 100 years, and I think I found another one, and I've checked it all out. Is it just going to get shot down automatically because, oh, well, there's only one ever found?
No, absolutely not. You have to remember, though, that with the H and I grills on the banknotes, the H grills came first.
Mm-hmm.
And at a later time, the I grills were issued. And generally, the higher values are going to be scarcer because there was less need.
Mm-hmm.
So if you, say you printed, say you grilled 1,000 stamps.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're going to use the first class letter rate up a lot quicker than you're going to use the 90-cent stamp.
Mm-hmm.
So when they needed another run of grilled stamps and they changed the grill, you're less likely to get those stamps that aren't going to be frequently used. And that's why the higher values are so much rarer with the I grill.
Yeah, I have not seen the 30-center. I would like to, but I don't think that actually 30-cent and 90-cent eye grills exist. I think that the 30-center was misidentified.
That's entirely possible. But so, okay, that makes sense for the high values. So why is the 1-cent Z grill so rare?
Well, it's likely that the Z grill was an experimental grill and that possibly only one sheet was grilled with that particular griller. Now, there were six values that are known with the Z grill on it.
Mm-hmm.
The 2, 3, and 12, I believe, were... There are...
And a 15.
Well, the 10, and the 15 are all extremely scarce. And
the 1 cent, there's 2 known. The 10 cent, there's 6 known.
Right.
And the 15, there's 2 known.
And that's probably because maybe only one sheet was done with those values, and the other ones were done. They didn't like the look of it, or for whatever reason. And then the sheets of the 2, 3, and 12 were just stuck in the regular stock and mixed in and issued. Whereas the sheets of the others did not get done, and so were not used and did not get out.
That makes sense, because it looks like they were experimenting a lot back and forth trying to find a size where the all-over grill, was it the A grill that's all over? They said that was just getting destroyed trying to put it through the perforating machine after the fact, because it damaged the paper so much.
Also separating the stamps. The sheets probably would fall apart, and if you actually rip the stamps apart,
it turns it more into consistency of toilet paper once it's all over like that. So then they started experimenting with different sizes.
Right.
Well, they experimented with getting the grill away from the perforations. Basically, that's what it was.
Oh, okay.
We don't want to grill the perforations because that turns the perforations into mush.
Okay, so a grill that's big enough to stand out but small enough where it can be far enough away where it's never going to get hit by the perforations.
So another thing you need to know when you're collecting the A grill stamp is that those normally come with perforation faults. Short perfs, shorter perfs, pulled perfs. Because they were so weak and the grilling destroyed, and when they were separated, they just destroyed them. So the way they're valued in the catalog is with perforation faults. And some of them can be significant, but if you find one with only a few or you know, you win the lottery when you find one with no perforation faults. But if you get a certificate and it says with normal perforation faults for the issue, that's okay. That's the way it's valued. That's the way it's supposed to be.
It's like the stamps from Finland with their big, huge perforations. Mm-hmm. You kind of expect the perf flaws because it's just the way they were made.
And absolutely, it's worth trying to pursue one that doesn't have perforation flaws. But expect that normal stamp, the normal condition that you will find them in is with those flaws.
And actually, if you find one without perforation flaws,
that's a good item to send to an auction.
It's a good item to send to an expertizer because that may not be real.
Oh, no, yes. I saw a good one. Somebody had an example of an egg grill that they showed me at a show. What do you think this is worth? Well, it had absolutely perfect perf tips all the way around,
yeah.
Like dead on perfect.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it's worth a couple bucks.
Probably.
So is there a business in ironing out the grills?
Oh, no. The grilled stamp is always worth more than the regular stamp.
Well,
what about the
careful. The 1869 issue.
Oh, good point.
Is known.
Yeah.
That's
some of those are known without grill, and they have been ironed to press out those grills.
I totally forgot about 1869. Now, I want to apologize to the year 1869.
If you want to collect that particular issue without grill, you have to collect them with original gum. Mm-hmm. It can be a used stamp, but it has to have original gum on it, and it can't be heavily disturbed, because you have to be able to verify that it was grilled with the gum.
Here's my suggestion to anybody who thinks they have an 1869 used number 114 3-cent train stamp without a grill. It's got a grill. You might not be able to see it. It's got a grill. Save yourself the expertizing money. It's got a grill.
Well, I always find them. I use two methods. I'll either float it in Ronsonol.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's for hard to find ones, that sometimes will help it show up. Or the method that I was taught was to flip it over. You can take a graphite pencil and rub it hard on like a sticky note so that you have a pile of loose graphite, and very carefully, very lightly, like you're dusting for fingerprints, dust that across the back of the stamp, and sometimes it'll help pick it up or you can better identify it.
Scott Triple showed me in Scott 01 that really like.
Well, I mean, that's just... Yeah, if it's a used stamp, you throw it in a bowl of water and you watch the water permeate the paper.
Because the water permeates very slow, whereas the...
What's the point of grilling? To break the paper fibers.
Right.
So guess what? When you throw it, where is it going to absorb quickest? At the broken fibers.
Gosh, I was going to say that.
I know you were.
That was a rhetorical question, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Oh, okay.
Holy grill marks, Batman!
Which, by the way...
Oh, no.
AmazingRibs.com says why we don't need grill marks and why you should flip often. So if you are cooking ribeye, go to AmazingRibs.com and they will tell you why you should avoid grills.
Well said.
So then my last thing, the thing that I use to identify mine so that I know that I'm doing it better is... the clear half-page sized specialty gauge. It's got tons of U.S. specialty gauge, tons of information on it. It's got actual full grill patterns on it that helps you count the rows and columns, talks about which direction that they should be facing.
Well, that's a fantastic tool for anybody who expertizes anything. That is a tool that is just monumentally useful. Anybody who doesn't have one, you should spend the $8.50 and buy
it's
one.
It's well worth it, absolutely.
So what does the grill do to the gum? Is it applied before or after the gum?
After the gum, and it's also so it's going to break the gum as well as the paper fibers.
Interesting.
Which is why you need to collect the ungrilled 1869s with original gum, because you need to see that that gum has not been broken.
So the intact gum is what you're looking for to prove.
Right, because
gotcha.
Because if you've pressed out the grill, you're still going to have evidence on the gum that the gum was broken.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the paper fibers can be pressed, the gum would have to have then been melted, and it's going to look different if you're going to try and cover that up as well.
So the Scott catalog, it says here that they haven't listed all the available grills in the stamps. They just kind of footnote them or don't list them at all because some of them are newer discoveries?
No.
Well, they mentioned the V-grill and the I-grills fairly recent, they said.
Yeah, they used to list the H and I-grills together as one listing. And a couple of years ago, they broke it out into separate listings, realizing that some of these are more scarce in one or the other. And the prices typically reflect that the I-grills are scarcer.
They wanted to make stamp collecting really complicated.
Well, I think what she's talking about is the fact that more grill varieties were found after the catalog numbers for those stamps had already been made. So that's why you get like the 6Z grill issues are 85A through 85F. So they didn't have to shuffle everything around to account for them.
Yeah.
Right.
They had a numbering system, and you see that today. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll list a stamp and they'll put letters on it because they don't have a spot to put it.
So how can you tell if someone's tried to remove the grill off a stamp?
It's broken paper fiber. You can't. They have to repair the broken paper fiber, and
you have to do that.
I have no clue how to do that.
Yeah, you really can't.
Well, I've seen people with U stamps try to iron them out, like for the one set Franklin's and the train stamp.
That doesn't work.
It doesn't.
I have seen people put them in these high pressure presses.
Mm-hmm.
Where it smashes the paper, and it basically just reduces the thickness of the paper about half the size. You can tell that because you dip it in Ronsonol, and it absorbs it really slow because the paper mesh is just so compressed together because they're trying to hide those broken paper fibers.
Oh, it gives it more of a density like a modern almost.
Exactly.
At that point.
I mean, just incredible density of the paper. But there's no way you can see the broken paper fibers under a large enough, if you know where to look, under a big enough power microscope.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen them where, to the naked eye, both on the train and the one set Franklin, they look flat to the naked eye.
Yeah.
As soon as you dip them in Ronsonol, you can see where it is. So
exactly.
People do try, but as soon as you get them wet, you can usually see it, especially under magnification.
Well, it's not just that. I mean, you can soak the stamp off an envelope,
mm-hmm.
put it into a book to make sure it's flat when it dries. And just putting it inside of the book will press it enough so that the grill is hard to see. I mean, that's common.
And I mean, that can take advantage of a novice interested collector right there because visually it looks correct.
Yeah.
So, you know, why wouldn't they buy it thinking that it's the non-grilled variety?
Well, that's why in Scott's catalog under 114 it says there are two of these known.
Mm-hmm.
And it also says that you have to...
Yeah.
Have gum.
Yeah. It has one that's mint and another one that came off a cover where they could check it as it came off the cover.
Wow. Okay, is that about wrap it up for grills?
That's
I think so.
Okay, let's open our Jenny sheet.
Ooh, I feel lucky here. I feel lucky. And it is... $12 in postage.
Oh.
Okay, you can email us at stampshirehereToday@gmail.com, Twitter, StampshowHT, Facebook, StampshowHereToday, and our website, www.stampshowheretoday.com, with your questions and comments. And catch it anything stamp or unstamp related. So you can now leave us your questions and comments on our Google Voice answer machine anytime. Country code 1-949-873-4298. There is also a link to a Google Voice on our website so you can make the call from your computer. And on that note, keep collecting.
Hi, this is Tom Mills, H.R. Harmer Stamp Auctions. You're listening to the podcast for Stamp Show Here Today.
This episode of Stamp Show Here Today is brought to you by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, the book that teaches you about repurfs, regums, color varieties, and much more. Get yours for $10 at www.philatelicsecrets.com today.
on it. Return to sender.